Welcome back. ESPN Radio 1700 AM. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour with your host, David McKelvin, and myself, Ryan White. Thanks for joining us. We have two guests in studio today. First, I'd like to introduce my paintball buddy, the only guy I know that wears those funny little shoes that have the individual toes wrapped, my CPA, Aaron Hungerford. How you doing, Aaron? Thanks for joining us.
Good. Thanks for having me on.
I'd like to introduce Kelly Klein from Bluefly Lending, a lender broker. Kelly, welcome.
Thanks, Dave, for having me.
I think it's time to get right to it. One of the most important topics on everybody's mind, especially centered around real estate tax, is the proposed Obamacare 3.5% tax hike, or I guess it would be sales tax, on a home. I'm getting a lot of emails about this. I would imagine, Aaron, you're getting all kinds of propaganda sent to you about what's true and what isn't true.
So
first thing we'd like to talk about is how does that work, and do we expect that to really affect people? And should people with, you know, what size home should someone be concerned about running out and selling before the end of the year, before this takes place?
Well, the main thing I want to distinguish between with this tax is that it has been labeled a sales tax, even labeled a real estate sales tax, when really it's more appropriate to call it a HI or hospital insurance tax, which is intended to cover kind of the additional Medicare costs of Obama's bill. But it is considered a 3.8% tax on the lesser of two items. And one is net investment income, and the other is modified adjusted gross income. And whichever one of those exceeds $250,000 for married filing joint, it's the excess of $250,000 for that filing status. That excess is a 3.8% is applied to. So the reason people are thinking that it is applied to the sale of homes or real estate is because that would be included in net investment income. Now, the misconception that I hear most, the kind of the propaganda, is that it's applied to the sale of a home. And so I specifically want to clear the air and just kind of tell any listeners that it does not apply to the excluded portion of a gain for the sale of a primary residence under IRS Code Section 121. And for those of you that don't know, that is, if you sell a primary residence and you have a capital gain, if you've lived in it for two out of the last 5 years, as a married filing joint, you get to exclude $500,000, single $250,000. The 3.8% would not apply to that excluded portion.
So that was fairly complicated,
okay.
as many codes
as
are.
Most CPA answers will be,
right.
So I apologize for that.
So if you didn't have your pencil out, you may want some further consultation on that. If you're interested in finding out if you qualify, the real estate hotline here, 888-551-2593. Again, 888-551-2593. So break it down for me, Aaron. I mean, in general, most people out there, if I'm here in San Diego, average home, $500,000, $400,000, $700,000, generality speaking, do I have to run out and put my home on the market before the end of the year to not have to pay this tax? And I realize there are specifics that you don't know about each case. But in general, for the listeners out there, what do you say about that?
Well, the biggest thing I'd have to say is if your adjusted gross income, modified adjusted gross income, but for most people that boils down to adjusted gross income, if that is not over $250,000, first off, you're not going to get hit with the tax.
That's married, right?
Married filing joint, yes, $250,000. If you're single, it should be noted that it is $200,000. Yeah. Now, most people would think, okay, well, obviously if I sell my house at a big gain, it's going to push it over that $200,000 for single or $250,000 threshold for married filing joint. But it jumps it right back down if you exclude, under the IRS Code Section 121, if you exclude that gain by $500,000 or $250,000 for single. So, if you do sell your house for, let's say, $750,000 and you're single and you get a $250,000 exclusion and you have a $750,000 gain, it would drop down to a $500,000 potentially taxable gain after applying the exclusion. And then for you, it's the excess, if you're single, over $200,000. So that difference between $500,000 and $200,000 would be the amount that 3.8% is applied to.
Okay. So I think what you're saying here is, average person out there, not going to affect them a whole lot. When we start getting into the luxury home market, let's say $2 million, $3 million, $4 million, $10 million, these are really the people that have to be concerned with this extra tax. Does that sound correct?
I would definitely say that's correct. You would have to have your gain would have to be in the many hundreds of thousands of dollars in order for you to be hit with this tax for the average individual, yeah.
And I would think it would have to be a big hit in order to encourage you to sell your home today, if you weren't planning on it already, to take advantage of not having to pay this tax.
Yes.
That's a big life change.
Absolutely.
Are you seeing evidence of any of your clients talking about this and suggesting they're going to go out and sell their home?
No, not. I mean, I do have a lot of individuals that are it's a totally separate issue, but they're afraid of the home mortgage exclusion going away, or the mm-hmm. qualified principal residence mm-hmm. indebtedness cancellation of debt exclusion going away, which is set to expire in 2012.
The Mortgage Debt Relief Act.
Yeah, exactly. And they're definitely considering rushing out to do a short sale if they were going to do one eventually by the end of this year. But I haven't really I've had a lot of clients concerned about this tax, but not considering rushing out to sell their
propaganda in general, upset about it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, taxes go up, people are upset.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. Kelly, I mean, you're in the lending business. Chances are pretty good if someone is buying a multi-million dollar home. There may be a loan involved. Are you hearing people, you know, making waves and putting their home on the market or anything of that nature because of this extra tax?
Not hearing too much from that aspect of the clients. I mean, I think a lot of people these days are holding on to their properties. Interest rates are so great right now that they're taking advantage of the opportunity to reduce their monthly payments and keep those homes and be pretty happy the fact that they're still in a home here in San Diego County for the most part.
Well, you say that interest rates are still low, but I hear that this is the second week that they've actually increased. Is that right?
That is true. Actually, we have seen a bit of an uptick here over the last couple of days in the mortgage market. Freddie Mac is claiming that the average interest rate today is 3.59% on a 30-year fixed, and the homeowner is going to pay 0.6 of a point in order to get that interest rate. BlueFi Lending is very competitive, and oftentimes we do see ourselves right there within the market, even lower than the market in certain instances.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked a little bit about the Obamacare increase of 3.8%. What about this increase in capital gains that is set to expire? During the Bush era, capital gains were cut to 15% up and above the $500,000 that someone's exempt. So if you're selling a house and you're receiving more than $500,000, in January they're proposing an additional 5%, bringing the total taxable liability to 23.8%.
Well, 20 plus the Obamacare, yeah, 3, 23.8%.
Yeah, that's correct. So that's why I wanted to kind of distinguish what type of taxes they are. One's a capital gains tax, and one is the Medicare tax, the hospital insurance tax. So yeah, that's absolutely right. Once the Bush tax cuts expire, the capital gains is supposed to go from 15% to 20%.
Okay, so here's what I'm feeling. I'm feeling frustrated and angry right now because we're seeing the marketplace increase. We're seeing homes go on the market and sell, and now all of a sudden, here comes the government coming in saying, "Hey, wait a second, we want an additional 8.3%." up and above the $500,000 gain someone's going to make. I mean, for the high-end homeowner, and a lot of people in Carmel Valley, San Diego area qualify for this. In fact, Inman was reporting that home prices over $1 million have increased year over year by 23%.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I certainly my clients are frustrated at the increases in taxes, and you know, the Bush tax cuts expiring are certainly one way to plug kind of the deficits they have, and they are certainly geared towards people making high income.
Now, there's talk about this tax cuts being extended. I mean, you'd mentioned that it's in legislation now. Do you expect the 15% to remain in effect, or do we?
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I don't have the crystal ball, but I certainly expect the vast majority, if not all, of the tax incentives that are in place right now to stay in place. Yeah, I mean, the principal residence exclusion, the cancellation of debt exclusion, that is part of Obama's budget proposal. I'm sure the Republicans obviously are looking for tax breaks any and everywhere. I see all of these either remaining, and I certainly don't see any expiration date soon on these.
Got it.
Even though they are set to expire at the end of this year, What I mean to say is I expect them to be extended.
Right, because this is an election year. Everybody's going to jockey for position. They're going to promise the world. This is what we're hoping, isn't that right?
Yeah, yeah. And people are hurting, and I think that Republicans and Democrats alike don't want to see individuals who have remaining cancellation of debt, which could be in the hundreds of thousands, have to deal with that type of a tax burden and push them into potential bankruptcy.
We do see an upkick in the amount of homes on the market, which is not unusual during the summer. It's kind of the selling season. People want to be repositioned before school starts, and it's really the moving time. But I don't really feel that the potential for lack of extension of the Bush tax cut or the implication of 3.5% happening in the future to really be on the forefront of many home sellers' minds. I think it's something that people are frustrated about and not happy about, but I don't really feel that it's impacting many homeowners' decisions. And that's good. We would like to think that we're able to make a decision to buy or sell a home, you know, based on our own financial situation, not because new legislation coming down. When we come back, we will talk to Kelly Klein about, how long it really takes to go out and get a loan again after you've had a short sale or a foreclosure on your record. If you have any questions for us, our number here is 888-551-2593. Again, 888-551-2593. Or go to the website, pricelesshome.com, and inquire.
If you have your will and trust documents already in place, you are truly smarter than everyone else, but I'm curious about something. Who have you listed as your successor trustee? Are they licensed and insured to do this complicated job? Who in your life actually wants the responsibility of your tax, legal, financial, and possibly medical decisions? I highly recommend calling my quality of life expert and professional trustee, Marguerite Lorenz, 888-254-3250. That's 888-254-3250, or go to estateplanning101.org.
The best part about being smarter than everyone else is that we don't have to listen to all the talking heads. We don't have to listen to all the rumors and all the graybeards who think they know how this stuff really works. The law is on your side. That's right. The laws are designed to protect consumers from being riddled with debt. They're designed that way so that you can become debt-free and get a fresh start. You should do what I did. When I had financial stress, I called William McDonald with the McDonald Legal Group. Find out how you can use the law to your advantage. Delete your debt and keep your stuff. You got credit card debt, timeshares, old IRS debt, collections, medical bills, any of this stuff can be wiped away with the Chapter 7 bankruptcy, and it only takes 100 days. Call William McDonald today. 800-997-1235. 800-997-1235. 1235, or go online, sandiegobankruptcy.us.
Hi, Mr. Credit here. Are you looking to buy a new or used car? Would you like to get a special deal just for listening to the show? All you have to do is go to bestcardealsandiego.com and get connected with my friends at Toyota of Escondido. I guarantee you get a great deal and walk away happy. They'll give you the most for your trade and the lowest price for your new or used car purchase. They have a 12.5-acre facility, so finding the perfect car is easy. By the way, they can finance anyone. If you've had a bankruptcy, short sale, foreclosure, even a repossession, everyone walks away happy at Toyota of Escondido. Just go to bestcardealsandiego.com today. That's bestcardealsandiego.com. Toyota of Escondido is a family-owned and operated company, so you can support the local community, get treated the way you deserve, and ultimately get the best car deal in San Diego. Go to bestcardealsandiego.com right now. That's bestcardealsandiego.com. And get the best possible deal on a car in San Diego today. BestCarDealSanDiego.com.
Welcome back to Real Estate Radio Hour. Special guest Kelly Klein from Bluefy happens to be the VP of Sales, a lender broker community out there right now. I mean, a lot of banks were after all the brokers. There's a bunch of banks out there and a bunch of brokers out there jockeying for position right now with these interest rates being as low as they are. And I got to tell you, I am really seeing you guys on the move. Can't miss that highway billboard you have on 78. I'm hearing you on Rock 105.3. You're advertising in the Union Tribune. What in the world is going on over there at BlueFi?
Well, thanks for asking, Dave, and I appreciate you guys for having us on today. We're really doing some exciting things at BlueFi Lending here, and for those of you who haven't heard of us yet, you're going to hear about us fairly soon. We are truly one of San Diego's only direct mortgage lenders, and a lot of people don't really know what that means.
Yeah, what does that mean? What does that mean?
Well, direct mortgage lending takes place when you as the bank are in control of a transaction pretty much from start to finish. You're not the middleman to somebody else. You're not a lender that holds depositories. You don't issue credit cards. You don't secure car loans. All you do is merely underwrite, fund, and sell on a secondary market to Wall Street mortgage paper.
And why as a consumer, why do I care if that guy does that?
As a consumer, you get a couple of benefits working with a direct mortgage lender. The most important thing is that you are not in the hands of a middleman. You truly are in the hands of the people who will make the decision. And in a lending platform like BlueFi Lending, we do have the luxury of packaging our loans and selling them to the mainstream. So we do have access to multiple banks' underwriting guidelines. So when a borrower might have a little bit more of a challenging credit history or may have a little bit less income than they might need to qualify, we have a little bit more flexibility than maybe a broker would as a middleman who doesn't really control that transaction.
I see. Sounds like a good reason.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the core strengths of being a direct lender.
Well, let's get to one of the questions that we were leading into before the break, and that is, how long do you have to wait after a short sale or foreclosure before you can actually qualify to buy another house?
That's a good question. We actually are dealing with that on a very regular basis. Right now, with where we are here in 2012, the bubble bursted here in California back in 2008 when all the houses started hitting foreclosure. And right now, in order to qualify for a new mortgage, if you're going to get financing, there's two different types of financing that we typically look at that are most prominent in the marketplace, which are conforming mortgages and FHA mortgages. And the FHA mortgage has become a little bit more flexible in allowing people to qualify in a shorter period of time. If you've had a foreclosure and you do want to secure a mortgage with an FHA loan, you need to wait 3 years from the date that that home actually trustee sold. However, if you do take advantage of a short sale, you're in a better position. And with a short sale, if your mortgage had gone delinquent at any point in time, you need to wait 3 years as well. However, if you're able to keep your mortgage current through the short sale process and not go delinquent, the next day after you sell your home, you can qualify for an FHA mortgage.
So if I'm making my payment through the short sale process, I can get a loan the next day, theoretically, FHA.
That's correct.
FHA. And just off the cuff, how many people are you seeing out there that are successful at a short sale without missing a payment?
You'd be surprised. I think there's a lot more strong negotiators out there that have figured out a way to work with the banks. And the banks are definitely far more interested in facilitating a short sale than the foreclosure. It's a lot more expensive for a bank to foreclose than it is to negotiate a short sale.
Well, I agree with you. I agree that the banks want to see the short sale, but it's certainly been my experience that the banks don't pay attention to you unless you're delinquent. Are you saying you're seeing a large quantity of people that are successfully completing short sales while being current? There's a lot of clients I have, they don't necessarily want to miss payments. They're happy making their payments. Happy is not the right word. They're willing to make their payments. They recognize there's going to be a credit hit if they don't, but they've been told, and I found in practice, that the banks aren't going to pay attention to the short sale unless they're almost in foreclosure.
That's been my experience as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just can't get through to the department they need to until they go delinquent. It's right. Almost like the bank needs to be proven that they mean business.
Well, I think that has something to do with it. It has to be somewhat painful for the borrower to go through the process. They make it that way on purpose. And are you seeing a large percentage of people that say, hey, give me a loan? I wasn't delinquent. Here's my short sale.
I wouldn't say it's a large amount, but there definitely are cases when we have seen that. People have been successful in negotiating those short sale terms.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about how long do you have to wait after you've either had a foreclosure or you've done a short sale before you can actually qualify to get a loan. If you have any questions, call us at 1-888-551-2593. Now, I have a question for you, Kelly. what kind of loan programs are out there? I mean, I know that the loan programs are still very strict. You still have to have good qualifications. But are you able to find 3%, 10% down programs out there? I mean, does everybody have to come up with 20%?
No, not at all. In fact, there are numerous loan programs that have come to fruition over the last couple of years that are making it actually a little bit more flexible to qualify. FHA financing does allow you to buy a home with as little as 3.5% down payment. There are even some programs that allow for 3% with a conventional loan, considered the My Community programs. Those programs are more tailored to certain financial demographics of people. You have to make certain amounts of income to qualify. It's not considered low income, but it's kind of your median income producers who can buy with that little down payment amount.
So say the name of that program again.
It's called the My Community Lending Program.
So one of the problems I'm having working with a client right now is FHA. There's no FHA communities out there. They're not approving them anymore, or if they are, they're few and far between. If it's a single-family home, not that big of a deal. But if it ends up being a condo, there's nothing that's FHA approved. We're looking at Carmel Valley. There's like four that are FHA approved. This particular loan program you're talking about, does it have similar requirements on the particular project?
Not necessarily. Not as specific. With FHA on a condo, you do need to have that condo project what we call warranted, meaning that it meets all the reps and warrants of the FHA guidelines for a formidable condo project. With the My Community program, it's a Fannie Mae guideline, and Fannie Mae's guidelines for warrantable condos is a lot more flexible in what its requirements allow.
Got it.
Well, Kelly, you know, back in 2007, Frank Northrup, the chief economist of Fannie Mae, the giant federally backed investor, calls the loosey-goosey standards that we had in 2005 and 2007. I mean, do you see that we're headed back towards the loosey-goosey guidelines that we used to have?
Not at all. I don't see that coming up, at least in the next couple of years. I don't think it'll happen until the private segment, private equity groups start really getting back into the marketplace and wanting to put their dollars and cents on the table. That's really what happened in the early 2000s when the subprime era kind of began. Most of that money was hedge fund, private equity groups that wanted to start doing something with their money. And as they became, so did the loosey-goosey guidelines, as you call them.
So Fannie Mae actually is claiming that they're going to be automated their underwriting system. They're going to go through a whole checks and balances system with their automated underwriting process. Is that going to cause problems in October?
I don't foresee that. We, in fact, at BlueFi Lending, we underwrite truly off of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac's guidelines, and they do produce what they call automated underwriting systems. A lot of banks out there you might work with have what we call overlays to the Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae guidelines. However, that's not all banks. And BlueFi Lending is one bank that lends without overlays. So we might have some more flexibility than the next guy around the corner when it comes to how we underwrite your Fannie Mae paper.
Well, you know, you talked about 3% down, 3.5% down FHA, and there's income requirements for your community program, and there's complex requirements for the FHA program. And I would imagine that's a small slice of the community out there that, or not the whole community, will qualify for those particular guidelines. So going further beyond those two programs, do we have a 5% down, a 10% down, or is 20 the next step?
Absolutely not. There is conventional financing does allow you to go with 5% down payment. There are still some private mortgage insurance companies out there in the marketplace today that are still insuring mortgages without 20% down payment. So as long as you fit the guidelines, debt to income ratios do get a little bit more tight. Sometimes there are some reserve requirements that need to be instilled to qualify for those mortgage insurance premiums. But we do offer mortgage insurance on loans up to 95% loan to value with a Fannie Mae or a Freddie Mac backed security.
Well, you know, back in the day, I must admit, you know, we've known each other for what, 15 years?
It's been some time.
And I used to create, I considered Kelly Klein the guy that I went to when I had problems. And he was always my go-to guy. And, you know, it wasn't long before I started thinking, why am I not just going straight to Kelly from the beginning? That way we can avoid any of the problems that we were experiencing. In fact, I recently had one of our past clients, he did a loan for Jim Luciani, who wrote, Glad to hear you're having great success with Kelly. I'm not surprised. Kelly is resourceful and quick on his feet. So when you mentioned earlier the overlays that your company does not have, tell me more about that. What does that mean, and how is that benefiting the people out there that are borrowing money?
Well, there's a lot of different banks that have lots of different overlays to guidelines. One particular overlay that you might see more frequently than others is when it boils down to what we call debt-to-income ratios. It means how much money do you actually bring in that's qualifiable versus how much debt do you actually have to pay out on. And when we consider a debt-to-income ratio, a lot of banks do not want to exceed 45% of your household income to consider your debt. And with BlueFi Lending, we will go up to whatever Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or FHA guidelines allow according to your automated underwriting system's findings. And in a lot of cases, especially with FHA loans, we've gone up as high as 56.99%. So when you consider someone has the ability to take another 12% of their income in debt versus what the average bank or some banks out there might allow for, that opens up a lot more buying power for certain clients.
Okay, well, when we come back from our break here, we're going to talk about how a lot of homeowners are going high or going short. Or when we also get back, we'll talk about how some of these homeowners that are doing short sales are actually walking away from their home with about $30,000 from the lender.
U.S. Census Bureau, over 90 million people in the United States own mutual funds. It makes me wonder how many of these people have read all the fine print associated with those investments. The good news is, you don't have to try and figure it out on your own. Let me introduce you to Dan Osgood. Dan is willing to do a free risk cost analysis for any investment portfolio you have. This free analysis will find all the hidden fees and uncover the missing money from your investments. If you have a retirement account or a bond portfolio of any kind, call the helpline today and get a free analysis so you can find out how much these investments are really costing you. 888-888-0154. That's 888-888-0154. Most people don't think they're paying any fees at all, but trust me, you definitely are. The question is, how much? Dan will tell you this for free, and he'll also give you a risk analysis snapshot so you can find out if you're taking on more risk than you should be. Just call the helpline today at 888-888-0154. That's 888-888-0154. If you're an honest person with an impeccable track record of exceptional customer service and the highest levels of integrity, then I want you to contact me today. I consider it my job to help the people of San Diego find the best service providers in town. And if you're one of them, I'd like to know about it. But let me be clear, I'm only looking for companies that have incredible records of execution and customer service. Email me directly, MrCredit@MrCredit.us. That's MrCredit@MrCredit.us, or call 888-888-0154.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Radio Hour with David McKelvin and Ryan White. Special guest Kelly Klein and independent CPA Aaron Hungerford. If you have any questions, call us at 1-888-551-2593. Now, here what we're finding is that homeowners that are doing short sales, now that the banks have actually got everything together and they got their programs together, underwriting processes for the short sales are together, they're actually giving homeowners up to $30,000 just to walk away doing the short sale process. So, you know, we have seen recently, I've got one just closing on Friday, the homeowner is receiving $17,000 just to do the short sale. Now, how they come up with their number is kind of a mystery.
Well, tell them, give us some idea of the value of the home.
Okay, well, it was one of those list high, and if it doesn't work, go short, which is what we're seeing a lot of people do because of the lack of inventory out there right now. What a lot of the homeowners are doing is they're deciding based on the comparables. Let's disregard a few of those. Let's put the house on the market. We don't need a sign. Let's see if we can get offers because there's investors out there that are willing to write offers on properties just to see what the banks are willing to come back at. And so we had this house, no sign, on the market, listed high for a couple months, didn't sell. We went short. It sold for $540,000, and the homeowner's receiving $17,000 just to get out of the property. And, in fact, Kelly Klein, you're doing the loan for the buyer, aren't you?
That's correct.
Yeah. So we're seeing more and more of this. In fact, previously we had one where they qualified for HAFA, which was, what, $3,000?
$3,000.
Uh-huh. And they got $20,000 in addition to that just to close the short sale. So a lot of homeowners that are out there that are thinking, gosh, what do I do? Obviously, you're living in the home, not making your payments in some cases. And we've seen, like, Aaron, you were talking about as much as 4 years you've seen people.
Oh, yeah. I have one friend that was in his house over 3 years. And then they – I mean, I couldn't believe the story. The bank paid him $30,000 to get lost.
Yeah, like almost like cash for keys.
Yeah, I mean, it was just amazing.
And with the Mortgage Debt Relief Act ending this year, we're seeing, you know, a lot of people are putting their house on the market. Granted, they're putting them on their high because when we look at the inventory, we're finding that there just aren't very many homes in the community that are on the market. So when you have market control, in a lot of ways you can control what the home sells for.
Well, so let's be clear here. It certainly hasn't been my experience that every short sale is getting thousands of dollars to go through. By no means is that the case. Really, what we found, it's somewhat arbitrary.
Lender specific.
Well, mine was Chase.
Mine was B of A.
B of A is – so they're paying, but it doesn't seem like it's something necessarily that the borrower is doing to instigate this money. It seems like, in my case, they were mailed a letter. She happened to open it because there's tons of mail she didn't open from her lender, and it happened to say this, and naturally that was a huge motivator for it. So in that case, it did exactly what the bank wanted to do, but in many cases, I would think that the homeowners or borrowers are getting these letters. They're never opening them, or frankly, they're not being sent at all. There doesn't seem to be much rhyme or reason.
Or it's just, frankly, too good to be true, right?
Too good to be true.
When you're in that situation, you're getting all kinds of stuff nailed to you. You know, people are calling you, hounding you to make your payments. You don't know which way is up. You don't know who to believe. And then a bank sends you a letter saying, hey, we'll pay you money to do the short sale. I mean, you know, really? Okay. So, you know, here's a story that's going on right now. You know, we've got a homeowner that hired us to sell the property. They listed it high because we wanted to try to see what the market response was.
And before you say it listed high, I think what you mean is they listed it at a number that would pay off their existing debt and cover closing costs.
That's
right?
Correct.
That's what you mean. That's what we mean
that's
by
correct.
High.
But not, it was higher than the comparable sales were.
Of course.
We're alluding to the price, you know, that this home should be at. But without the inventory out there, you know, you have a lot of market control. So we priced that property at $650,000. About 2 months later, we realized that we weren't going to get that price. We reduced it down to $550,000. We got an offer for $540,000 right away. The buyer was sight unseen. Now, this was a home that was on the market. Obviously, we took professional photography of it, but we never even had a sign. So from a neighborhood perspective, the neighbors weren't aware of what's really going on. We were systematically marketing this property in such a way that we can get a buyer and not necessarily have it be as intrusive as someone out there that might want to sell their house short has to. I mean, people think that they've got to have hundreds of people running through their house. They've got to have a sign in the front yard. You know, that may not necessarily be the case. There are a lot of investors out there that are willing to write offers on property sight unseen just to start the process to find out where the bank's going to end up in the end.
So I think you're saying there's ways of avoiding the stigma that a lot of people are afraid of through the short sale process. And in this case, our buyer was an investor, right? What was up with the buyer?
Oh, the buyer was a VA. The buyer was relocating from Japan, and they bought the house sight unseen. In fact, we were a little bit nervous about the home inspection to make sure everything was good to go, but they're in love with it. We're going to close on Friday. Docs are already out, and the homeowner's got it set up where the proceeds that she's receiving, in this case $17,000, are coming straight to her bank.
Now, Aaron, I've been asked this question twice now. When I receive a moving funds from my short sale, in this case $17,000, am I taxed on that as the previous homeowner?
Effectively, it's kind of increased the sales proceeds for when you actually sell the house.
Well, let's
so,
say
yeah, it's an increase to the capital gain if there is one.
Okay, but it's a short sale, so she's taking a $100,000 loss, I would think.
Yeah,
right.
So
it would wash out.
In that case, an offset to the loss.
Got a complete offset, so we don't have to worry about that and put it all in her pocket.
Yeah, it's factored into either the capital gain or the capital loss. It's certainly not something that you would report as ordinary income subject to self-employment tax or anything like that.
Well, wait a second now. Isn't this the sale price based on the purchase price? So the basis price would be the purchase price. I mean, if you're refinanced, let's say you bought a house for $200,000. 3 years later, you know, 2005, the house is worth $600,000. You take $400,000 out. Now you're selling it for $500,000. I mean, isn't there over anything over $250,000 based on that purchase basis point? Isn't that still a taxable gain there?
Anything over the $250,000?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So it is possible you could be in a short sale.
Oh no, it's possible they could contribute to a taxable transaction. Yeah.
Certainly. Now, Kel, you did the loan for this, or in the process thereof.
Yes.
And it's a VA buyer.
Right.
Right. And so what are the requirements and down payment, you know, requirements, I guess, for a VA loan?
VA loans are actually very friendly for our veterans, and, you know, they really make it very easy for veterans to qualify. In this case, VA loans do go up to 100% loan to value. So a veteran who is eligible and has their eligibility certificate does not need to put a down payment down on a property. Depending upon the amount that they're looking to finance for a purchase. In this particular case, I think the borrower had to put maybe 2% down because the size of the loan was over the San Diego County VA limit of $477,000. So in that case, there's a formula that we use to determine the down payment. But there are cases where if you do buy a house for $477,000 or less, you don't have to put a down payment down. And in fact, on top of that, veterans are also not allowed to pay certain closing costs that typically pertain to a mortgage transaction. They call them non-allowable fees. And a lot of times either the lender will pick up these non-allowable fees or the seller will pick up the cost of these non-allowable fees. And oftentimes it equates to, you know, a couple thousand dollars, $2,000, $3,000, depending upon the price of the sale. So with VA loans, you need a 620 credit score and a lot of times no money for a down payment. Debt ratios can oftentimes go even higher than what you could with an FHA loan, as long as a veteran, you have what we call discretionary income. So for our veterans out there, since San Diego County is such a highly populated military town, it's a good time for you guys to get in the market and buy something.
Well, let's just be clear. When you're talking about a VA, it's only for primary residence. You can't buy a investment property with a VA loan, right?
That is correct. With a VA loan, you can only buy owner-occupied. No investments or second homes are eligible, and you cannot have any co-borrowers who are not your spouse. So if you're in a case where you might want to try to use a family member, a son or daughter or brother or sister to help you qualify, you do not qualify with anybody other than a spouse on a VA loan unless you're just a sole veteran buying it on your own.
Okay, so if someone wants to purchase a home for the first time and they're not VA, what would you say the process you would go through to make it nice and smooth for them?
What we definitely recommend is to consult with your mortgage lenders first. It's one thing to sit and look on Zillow or Redfin or your guys' website for that matter and take a look at what properties are out there on the market, but it's another thing to know what you can actually qualify for and afford. So we recommend to our clients that you walk through the pre-approval process, allow us to review your income and your assets, review your credit, coach you on anything that we might need to coach you on to help you and get into position so when you do find that right property and Ryan and Dave want to make an offer for you, we know that we can qualify you for that purchase.
You know, I find that it's a little bit difficult to get my buyers to open up their portfolio of investments and Social Security numbers without seeing a pretty home first. Are you finding the same barrier with getting people's information before they've actually found a home as before when anybody could get a loan, we want to say? You know, there was no need for this, or at least it didn't seem to be as necessary. Now I'm hoping that the understanding is out there that it's not as easy to get a loan and maybe more people are interested in truly going through a pre-qualification. Are you seeing more people interested in opening up their financial portfolio before they actually have found a place than before?
You know, that's a good question, and it's really hit and miss from our perspective. A lot of clients do really hold that information very valuable. I mean, obviously, your Social Security number is a very important number to keep a tight grip on. And unless these people are really serious about wanting to purchase a home, I do agree that some of them are keeping a pretty tight lid on their financial statements. But when we do find that they are interested and they really want to get the ball rolling, they're pretty gung-ho about it. And, you know, all my mortgage guys are very professional. We're very seasoned in the business, very knowledgeable on guidelines, and have a way with words that let them open up that can for us.
So changing gears real quick to refi, we've all heard rates are spectacular out there right now. What is a rate that if I have a rate of X percent, you know, whatever it is, and you tell me what X is, if I have that rate, I need to call and start talking about refinancing. What is the rate nowadays? And I know there's conventional and there's 7-year and 5-year and 30-year and blah, blah, blah. But just in general, what's the rate out there? If I got this rate or more, I need to do something about it because it's out there.
I would definitely recommend if you're sitting on an interest rate of 4.25% or higher right now, it's definitely in your interest to give us a call and talk to us about your situation. You know, a lot of people might even take that 4.25% down to a 15-year fixed at 3%. That payment might not increase but a couple of dollars, and it might make sense to reduce your term of your mortgage in half.
I mean, like the 15-year?
15-year fixed terms, exactly. A lot of people are in that mindset that I want to pay my house off as fast as I can. I want to pay as little interest as possible over the years of my loan. So a lot of people are taking advantage of a 3% 15-year fixed rate.
Mm-hmm. And with the 4.5 or higher, so I think you're saying the refi, I would imagine, that for the most part can be done with no points, no fees, depending on the rate?
Most of the loans that we write at BlueFi Lending are no points and no fees. Being that we are a direct lender and we sell our loans on the secondary market, we do offer very competitive pricing. And we understand that a lot of times the recovery period for paying points and getting a lower rate tends to be 4, 5, 6, sometimes even 7 mm-hmm. years down the road. So we show a borrower how much more efficient this mortgage refinance would be without paying the costs.
I understand. Well, we are seeing there is a large amount of fence sitters out there with respect to going through this short sale process, which can be arduous. You got to turn over all your financial information. You got to put up with buyers seeing your home. You got to put up with offers. You got to deal with the bank. None of that's fun.
First of all, there's nothing short about a short sale.
That's right.
I mean, there's a you may receive cash to do the short sale from the lender at this point. They've, you know, got that incentive going. And I got to say, I have more short sale sellers more motivated than they've ever been these days with that incentive in place. However, there is a lot of paperwork involved, and it could take 6 months.
Six months, 8 months, a year. It takes a long time, and it's an arduous process. And there's no guarantees there's going to be any money for you when you're all said and done. So the alternative to that is foreclosure. And, you know, Kelly, you mentioned a couple of the reasons we might want to go the short sale route versus foreclosure in terms of getting a loan again. But another issue with that is the tax implications. There is the Mortgage Debt Relief Act that is set to expire at the end of this year. And when we come back, Aaron Hungerford is going to tell us exactly how that debt can or cannot be canceled based on the short sale you go through and, you know, if the act is still around, well, let's say in 2013. If you have any questions for our guests, the number here is 888-551-2593. Again, 888-551-2593. If you'd like to talk to Aaron about exactly how you're going to avoid the 3.8% sales tax, he has offered a free initial consultation for anybody that's interested, as well as Kelly is willing to go over your financials and see what he can do to get you under that 4.5% mark.
Again, 888-551-2593.
Are you trying to decide what to do about your home? Do you feel like you might be upside down on your loan? Hi, Mr. Credit here. I know what might be going through your mind, and the uncertainty alone can be stressful. You know I'm a big fan of the truth because it helps people make real decisions. Before you start making decisions about your home, you need to find out what it's really worth. Not from one of those online places that are way out of touch with the local market either. All you have to do is call the Mr. Credit Real Estate Helpline to get a free home valuation, a $350 value, absolutely free. 888-951-2929. That's 888-951-2929 to find out the true value of your home today. 100% free. 888-951-2929 or online at MrCreditRadio.com.
Come on, be one step ahead of everybody else. Let Mr. Credit help you. Call 888-951-2929.
It's no secret that interest rates are at all-time lows and real estate prices are lower than they've been in many years. However, is it time to pull the trigger if you're currently paying rent and ready to buy? There's only one way to find out. Call John Girotes today and get a free rent versus own analysis at 760-522-2298. It only takes a few minutes to get all the numbers put together so you can determine what's best for you. 760-522-2298. That's 760-522-2298.
Para resultados y más información acerca de este programa, consultar la página espnradio1700.com.
Welcome back to Real Estate Radio Hour with Ryan White and David McKelvin as your host. Special guest Kelly Klein, the VP of Sales at BlueFi Lending, and Aaron Hungerford, an independent CPA.
When we, in the last break there, we talked about the tax implications of a short sale versus going into foreclosure. And there's been, probably at the beginning of this short sale tidal wave, there was talk about being able to negotiate away the, I guess it is a 1099-C with the bank. And, you know, it's been my experience that short sale, the 1099 is coming. 1099-C is coming no matter what. I mean, have you, in your experience, Aaron, have you ever heard of anybody negotiating that away?
No, I haven't. And 1099-C is pretty much just a tax form the bank reports to you and reports to the IRS so that they know debt has been canceled. Whether it's reported or not, or whether you were to get somebody from the bank to agree not to issue you the form, doesn't change the fact that you still had cancellation of debt and you're still required to report it to the IRS.
Okay, so good point.
let's get this straight. So let's say that I sold a house for $500,000 and I owed $600,000.
Mm-hmm.
So the bank would say, write off a $100,000 loss. They are going to 1099-C me?
Correct.
And the IRS is going to treat that as income?
Well, generally it would be income. The Mortgage Relief Act does treat it as qualified principal residence indebtedness, which never used to exist before. And under that provision, you can exclude it from your taxable income for federal purposes up to $2 million.
So it didn't occur before, meaning that when we had this happen 10, 15 years ago, there was a whole lot less incentive to short sale because I would actually have to pay taxes as if I would have made that extra $100,000 in income to the government.
Yeah, I mean, there are other provisions for excluding cancellation of debt from taxable income.
Such as?
So, well, insolvency was the biggest before this was around.
Sure. That's pretty open-ended, though, isn't it?
Well, insolvency is kind of like you as an individual being upside down. So if you owe more debt that you're personally liable for in the aggregate than the fair market value of all your assets, mm-hmm. if all that debt exceeded the fair market value of your assets by as much as the cancellation of debt or more, then it wasn't taxable to you. So, but for younger people, that's great. You know, younger people have a lot of debt and less assets. For older people with less debt and more assets, that's where it really started to hit them hard when the market went down. Because anybody with a retirement plan, you know, with hundreds of thousands of dollars in it, that just threw off the equation right there.
So insolvency, which has been on the books and will be on the books, is kind of a big picture look at everything that's going on. And if you've only got the home and nothing else and the home is upside down, hey, you're insolvent. No big deal.
Generally, yeah, because if you do 100%, you know, like your example, 100% financing where you've got a loan for $100,000, if it drops down in value to $400,000 and they sell it for $400,000, you know, no other, you know, ignoring closing costs and stuff like that, if there's a $100,000 cancellation of debt, well, by definition, that is the amount of the insolvency is the drop in value.
Sure. And so if instead, as you mentioned, I'm older, I have retirement, perhaps I have some other real estate or some other income that's actually making money, then when compared with this particular property I'm trying to get rid of that happens to be upside down, my big picture isn't necessarily insolvent anymore.
Exactly. And that's what hit people hard. And that's why this act was enacted.
Okay.
So without respect to insolvency, if it was a loan that was taken out to buy, build, or substantially improve a primary residence, then if you had any cancellation of debt up to $2 million, just immediately excluded from your taxable income.
So this,
very nice.
Well, let's just say if you did a short sale on a non-owner-occupied property, does this apply?
Owner-occupied, I think of as kind of a lending term. So you're thinking maybe like a rental?
Primary residence. Yeah, if it's a rental, I've got a rental, it's upside down. You know, yeah. My tenant's making $2,000 a month payments to me, and the mortgage is $1,000 a month. So
or they're not making payments at all.
Yeah, okay, yeah, they're not making payments at all. Or they're slow pay, they're having trouble, you know.
Yeah, with the rental, see, if you have a loss, if there's a huge loss with the primary residence, you can't take it as a capital gain. You can't offset income with it. You know, if it's a huge gain and it's over the exclusion amount, you'd have to pay tax on it. It's a little bit different with a rental property because with a sale of business property at a loss, and obviously it would be at a loss or we wouldn't be looking at cancellation of debt, then you have a loss carryover. So generally speaking, the loss that you would get from disposing of rental real estate is, for the most part, going to be equal to the cancellation of debt, because the debt was taken out to purchase it in the first place, if that makes sense. So my experience with rental properties is that if they sell it at a loss and they have cancellation of debt, sure, I could try to find a provision to exclude it from cancellation of debt, to exclude it from their taxable income, but I usually just let the cancellation of debt sit there and wash out with the net operating loss that it creates, if that makes sense.
So it seems like I'm kind of stuck on how legislation may or may not change and how that may impact people's decisions to buy or sell a home. When we talked about one earlier, 3.8% sales tax. Now we're also talking about the Mortgage Debt Relief Act, which is set to expire at the end of this year. There's talk about it being renewed, but thus far it hasn't actually happened. If I'm to try and summarize there, if you've got not a ton of assets and would perhaps meet the insolvency standard, then it really doesn't matter to you if it's reenacted or not. But should you have other assets out there, maybe it makes a big difference to you. Aaron, what do you say about
that? That's exactly right. I mean it makes it, you know, doing insolvency creates a lot of additional substantiation to take into your accountant to, you know, analyze all your assets and liabilities, where you know, the qualified principal residence indebtedness exclusion is much easier to report and calculate. But yeah, if you feel that you are underwater and you don't have a whole lot of other assets, most likely you'll be able to exclude the debt from taxable income under insolvency.
If you're tuning in right now, we're talking with Aaron Hungerford, an independent CPA, about the potential Mortgage Debt Relief Act ending in January this year, actually 2013, if it doesn't get proposed. You know, if you have any questions regarding this Mortgage Debt Relief Act or a short sale, call us at 1-888-551-2593.
And I think this will be one of the biggest questions that, you know, Aaron, you would have to answer on an individual basis for people is, you know, truly, am I a good candidate for insolvency? And if so, then, you know, maybe I've got all the time in the world to worry about short selling of my home. But if we're to determine that you're not, you have other assets or whatever it happens to be, maybe it does make sense to go ahead and dispose of the asset prior to 2013. I mean, I think we all feel that it is going to be extended, but
yeah,
not necessarily sure. And perhaps the most important factor here is, if it isn't extended, what are the tax implications that are going to happen? And more so, I would think more people will opt for foreclosure, wouldn't they?
Yeah, more people probably – well, yeah. I mean, foreclosure and short sale, the tax implications are essentially the same, although the reporting requirements are a little bit different. But if you had cancellation of debt with either transaction – and you did not have the qualified principal residence indebtedness exclusion, then the only thing you really have to fall back on is insolvency or bankruptcy.
So in this situation David talked about, where there was $100,000 in debt relief granted, mm-hmm. right? If I just let it go to foreclosure, bank takes it, talk about my tax implications there.
If you do it by the end of this year?
End of this year, and well, if I'm foreclosure, it's not going to change, right? Foreclosure is not changing this
still
year versus next
debt
year.
Debt Relief Act applies to the foreclosure?
It does apply to the foreclosure.
Oh, okay. Let's tell me about that.
Well, foreclosure and short sale are, again, from a tax perspective, they're essentially the same, with one kind of notable difference, and that is that's unlike a short sale with a foreclosure. It's not really your typical willing buyer, willing seller scenario. So rather than the sales price being a very explicit sales price that you would ordinarily see on a HUD-1 or the IRS Form 1099-S, which I'm sure you guys have probably seen, it would be the fair market value of the property,
sure,
which is a little obscure. But you would be forced to calculate the cancellation of debt yourself, which is a little bit anti-intuitive. And that's where the foreclosure process is a little bit more difficult when you take it to your CPA or your accountant.
Okay, so I think what you're saying is that if you do a short sale before the end of the year, the Mortgage Debt Relief Act will protect the loss that you're receiving from the sale.
Yeah, or cancellation of debt that would be attributable to a foreclosure as well.
Okay, so if this doesn't get extended and you short sale, you'll be taxed on it. But in a sense, with a short sale, the homeowner will have some say-so in what the home sells for. Whereas in a foreclosure, they send it down to the courthouse and they sell it for $300,000 when you could have gotten $500,000 for it. So now you owe taxes on $200,000.
That's absolutely right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, not to delve too deep into it, but, you know, if the typical form you would get for a foreclosure is 1099A, and it's much different than 1099C, it's abandonment of property. So the lender is required to give you the principal balance and what their estimate of the fair market value is. And it's the difference between those two that you would treat as cancellation of debt. That cancellation of debt would be reported. And if it qualifies for principal residence exclusion, then essentially it would be the exact same thing under short sale or foreclosure, long as it was done by the end of this year.
Either one need to happen this year. Yeah. So if you're looking to get foreclosed on, make it happen this year.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes with the foreclosures, they won't give you the 1099-C. They'll just give you the 1099-A. And it kind of leaves you up in the air as far as, was their debt canceled? And so you have to do a little bit of digging yourself.
Well, I can see how if the property happens to be sold at auction on the steps, that it's, the ones that are bought, they're the ones that are bought under market. Nobody goes down there to buy a home they haven't seen for cash at fair market value.
Right.
So if your home is bought on the steps, it's bought at something under market, which theoretically is going to be a larger debt forgiveness, which is going to be fine, assuming you qualify for the Mortgage Debt Relief Protection Act up until 2013. But after 2013, there's implications that could be, substantially higher tax consequences.
Yeah, I don't want to say you have the choice of your sales price and cancellation of debt, but because fair market value is arguable in the case of a foreclosure, the difference between principal balance of the loan and the fair market value would be the cancellation of debt that you'd report on your tax return. So if you can come up with, and to use the IRS's exact terminology, clear and convincing evidence of an alternative fair market value as opposed to the one the bank reports on that 1099-A, well, if you have a higher fair market value, it would result in less cancellation of debt. So
I see. If you have a question about solvency, if you have a question about selling your home and are you going to hit with a 3.8% sales tax, if you have an interest rate over 4.5%, call the Real Estate Helpline, 888-551-2593. Again, 888-551-2593, or go to our website, pricelesshome.com, click on the radio button, and send us an inquiry. Thank you.